Hello, strong, feisty women. Some of you may recognize my voice. I'm Celine Yeager, host of the Hit Play Not Pause podcast. Throughout my career as a professional health and fitness writer and now a podcaster, I hear countless questions from women who are trying to understand how their ever-changing hormones impact their sports performance. So we decided to serve up some answers in a brand new series called Hormonal that we will be releasing on the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast feed. Throughout this four-part series, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Carla DiGirolamo and I will be tackling topics like periods, the pill, pregnancy, and conditions like PCOS, all from the perspective of sports performance. If you aren't already, follow the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast and stay tuned for our first episode releasing on April 15th. Also, have questions you want answered? Send us a voice note at speakpipe.com/hormonal and we'll get it answered on the show.
You are listening to If We Were Writing, a feisty triathlon-ish podcast. I'm Kelly O'Mara, and together with Sarah True, we head up a weekly group ride where we dish on all triathlon news and everything else-ish we want to talk about. We're joined regularly by Khadija Diggs and Jocelyn Wong-Neal, and Laura Sedol does her Sid Talk segment updating you on everything you need to know from the weekend. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If We Were Writing is a production of Live Feisty Media. Join us on our group ride. Yeah. All right, we have Sid this week, we think from New Zealand.
I think I'm from New Zealand as well. I'm not sure myself, but yes.
And Sarah came down with another, I don't know, an illness. As far as I don't have kids, but you guys can tell me this. As far as I can tell, if you have kids, you're always sick. Like, that's just how it works, right?
It's like someone's every other week. Sick. Yeah. We just take turns. Me and Sarah just take turns.
Yeah. My kids didn't get sick a lot, though.
Really?
Mm-mm. I was lucky for a lot of the time, though. We were able to keep the kids home. But I guess I had so many kids, they just, you know, all marinated right at the house.
Yes, I think it's the daycare cooties.
Yeah, it is.
And I've been fortunate not to have to really utilize daycare too much. But yeah.
That's like a big, like, I remember talking to some of the pro women, you know, who had kids like last couple of years, and it's like that's a big challenge for them because they like don't want to send their kids to daycare because they can't afford to get like randomly sick before a big race because then they like lose like their huge payday. But they also like can't afford childcare because like it's so expensive.
Sorry,
so
while I fall off my chair, they would lose their big payday.
They would lose their big. I'm just saying, they would lose like
they would,
you know,
lose something.
Yes. Nobody.
No, it is tricky for sure.
But then they also like, but childcare, you know, it's also like, it's not like they can afford to like pay someone and they.
Private nannies are even more expensive.
So it's like, what do you do? Yeah. And I know people like out of the world are like, well, you just like, can't you just like run at home and watch the kid? Like, all you do is like hang out and work out. But it's like, no.
I mean, if it's your job, it's like saying, oh, you work fully remote. Just keep them home with you while you're also trying to do like being a mom is a full-time job. You can't.
I mean,
both.
When they're newborns, you don't have to worry about that whole, you know, how they put the bladders in their jersey, stick the kid in the jersey.
Just have the child. It's not allowed anymore. Maybe it's different for a human being.
Yeah, that'll be aerodynamic. Exactly.
That is genius.
And I wonder if anyone's tried that. No, probably not. All right, but today we are going to talk T100 Miami, and we're gonna obviously have Sid answer all of our Ask a Brit questions after we take a quick ad break. So Jocelyn, I know, you know, we're getting older and aging, and you've been using Aminocos Heal as part of your like post-workout recovery, right?
Yeah, it seems like after I became a mom and then turned 40, my recovering abilities really tanked. So as you remember, I then tore my meniscus, had to get surgery in my knee, and now I've had this lingering ligament injury in my foot. So I've been adding a scoop of the chocolate flavored heel to like either a glass of chocolate milk or a recovery smoothie. And I love that it helps accelerate muscle repair and reduce inflammation so I can keep training and racing hard in my 40s.
Yeah. And so you use the Aminoco Heal chocolate. How do you like it? How's it taste?
It tastes pretty good. I mix it up with a bunch of stuff. So it's like tastes like a chocolate shake.
And all AminoCo products are 100% science-backed. It's, you know, Feisty's go-to essential amino acids. And you can get 30% off with the code WRITING, as in if we were writing, at aminoco.com/writing. You'll also get a free gift for new purchasers. That's AminoCo, AminoCo.com/writing, and use the code WRITING at checkout for 30% off and a free gift.
Chasing epic is the essence of the Orca brand. It's about seeking moments in life that make us feel truly alive and connected to the beauty of the world around us. And let's be honest, with a lot of swim, bike, and run, we get to see a lot of beauty. Orca's been a longtime partner of Feisty, and we work with them year after year because we love their products and their commitment to creating amazing wetsuits made for women. I absolutely love my Orca wetsuit. Apex is number one, but there's a range of triathlon wetsuits. You can choose between flexibility, buoyancy, or a combination of both. Really, there's a wetsuit for every triathlete and for all of your epic adventures. As a Feisty listener, you can get 15% off with the code IRONWOMEN15 at orca.com. Get out there and chase some epic, friends.
So Jocelyn, I was like trying to remember all of the questions we wanted to ask her that we were going to be like, we need a British person to explain things to us.
Bearing in mind, I haven't lived there since like 07.
We should just like speed round, right? Like,
oh my gosh.
Okay, park run.
Why is park run popular? Why?
It's just got this, God, it's been around for years. I think it just captured this vibe of community and going and doing this. It's every Saturday morning. It's 9 a.m. It's 5k. It's a set route in several parks wherever you are in the country, and they kind of just had this vibe where it's not competitive. It's just come along and do it, which is funny because they then do have records. Right, but it's just a really welcoming community, and it's just captured the nation, or it did, and just grown and grown. Like my mum does parkrun, and she started running having come to watch me in Roth. Right. And seeing the 5K women's run at the age of 72. Whoa. But now she'll rock. Yeah. And now she rocks up to the park run like every now and again. And I think that it's just, yeah, I don't know why, but it's just, it was at the right time, just jumped on the bandwagon of getting people wanting to do running. But I think it's because it just welcomes all abilities. So you can walk it, you can run it, you get an elite athlete going, but you also get the guy that's done 100 park runs, but he's running them every time, or he's walking them every time, or every time he does it, he runs a little bit further. And that's the goal. And they have just like, you know, you get a t-shirt for 10 park runs, you get 50, you get 100. Yeah.
Why aren't they popular here though? You've lived in America long enough. Tell us why.
I don't know if they've really hugely franchised them over here, but I was also said there's a different sense of community over here.
It's called in the States.
I think it's, yeah, it is. Like, even so, this is, I'm probably gonna like just,
you're gonna offend everyone, just go for it, whatever you're about to say.
So, and I don't think this is maybe relevant to part one, but I'm gonna try to use an example. Sports teams in the UK, football teams, it is community. You have a ground, you go, it's destroy if you win and lose, it's life and death kind of thing. That is your life. And I see, like, coming to the US, one, the teams don't necessarily have a same, the community around the ground isn't quite the same, or around the team. And I don't think that, it's more that you do it to be seen that you're a fan. I don't think there's that life or death, like, sense,
like,
of
for the
purpose.
NFL.
Oh, like there is, like, fans? I was gonna say, I don't think you've gone like big city NFL
and that,
yet. Like,
and that might be the difference. Whole, so yeah, that's so that's why thing. I'm saying this might not work, yeah. But I kind of just like, yeah, it's just a different, and also I think the Brits are kind of like, they're not tall, you know, we get that tall poppy syndrome. So I think for park
What's
run, it's
tall?
Kind of,
we don't know what that is.
Oh, that's another one. All right.
You need to ask another Brit.
You don't want to put your head above the parapet to say that you're good or better than everyone. It's a very, like, there's a very self-deprivating, like lower confidence, whereas I think that is very different in America, where everyone's kind of like,
we're all tall poppies,
and yes,
all tall poppies.
There's a lot more sweeping statement. There's a lot more confidence in America about selling yourself and how amazing everyone is and what how many results they've got, sort of thing. Whereas that's very non-British. So yeah, so I think that's where their park run, because it was just more this sense of community: rock up, do it. You can walk it, you can run it, you can take your dog. You can push a pushchair, like it's
What was the other? Oh, explain hooligans to us.
Hooligans. Oh well, that's a good one. I can go on the football slant on that one.
Good. Okay.
So hooligans are
how offensive a term is it?
Yeah,
though?
Is it an offensive?
Like,
term?
Are we when we're saying this right now? Are all our British listeners like, oh my god, turning off like, them,
cringing?
No. So to be called a hooligan. Like, you could take it in two ways. Like, you could be doing it to take the piss. Take the mickey. Is that another one that I need to explain?
Yeah. I have to explain that one.
Segment
ever. So a hooligan is someone who, and again, sweeping statement, normally, like, younger-ish, but have bad reputation and going around, they're just disrupting things or they're destroying things, or they're graffitiing, or they're littering, or they're causing riots, or they're just causing public nuisance, I would say, is probably a hooligan. But you can kind of like say it jokingly to like little kids if they're just like a little bit obnoxious, or they're just, you know, like kids are just like,
that's,
oh, you're
the
a hooligan.
American version.
You know, you're a hooligan because you're just a bit, you know, a little bit wild, or you're just causing chaos, but they're not doing anything wrong. So
is it offensive? Because that's the real, that's what this comes down to.
Is it neo-Nazis hooligan? And skinheads?
Oh. I mean, it could be, you could describe those people as hooligans. I would pick a stronger word probably for those people. Hooligans, I kind of feel, is a little bit more like, looser. Mm. Like if I was called a hooligan, I guess depending what I was doing, but I wouldn't hugely take offense, I don't think.
Okay.
Because that's what I said, you can say it to kids, oh, you're a hooligan. But you can say it in a very loving. Oh, give me a context. What was it? What was it?
Hooligans, like the like when Wahoo calls them Wah hooligans.
Okay, true.
And we were trying to decide if they just didn't know this because Khadijah, apparently they're based in Atlanta, and we were trying to decide if they just didn't know.
No. They're based in Alpharetta. They don't like us. They don't like. They don't deal with the South Side. So
again, I would say in that context, hooligans, it's like a gang. So you could be a hooligan if you're in a gang, and it's that gang mentality that goes around.
Isn't gang bad? Aren't we like I grew up where there were actual gangs, like, and that's not a good thing.
But it's because
now we're like, you're not allowed to say that.
Who's is it Sarah McLarity that's got like a tri club, or there's a tri club in Florida that's called Slappers? Or a swim group that's called Slappers?
Yeah.
Do you guys know what
is that offensive?
Do you know what
too?
Slappers means in English?
No, now we need to know what this is.
Slappers are tarts.
We don't know what tarts are.
Oh, are they blueberry or strawberry?
Are they sweet tarts? Like candy?
A slapper would be almost en route, like the prostitute type. Short skirts, short tops, exposing a lot. A slapper is
like a harlot.
Solid
word.
Yes.
Excellent.
So it was really funny when I saw this swim squad called the Slappers. And I was like, and it's all these kids going around with slapper on their back. And I'm like, I'm not sure they know what that means in English. So I think that must have been a US club. So yeah, apologies.
Yeah, definitely a US
totally
club.
Totally offended in this segment.
Were there any other British questions we had?
It's funny how I just use British words to explain the British questions and then go into further explanation.
Why are the British women so good?
That's a good question. Why are the British women so good?
They
right
took
now?
The whole podium, T100.
At one point, there was like the top six were
six.
Like all
and
Brits.
They were the top six, and Emma Pallant wasn't even in that top six at that point either. I think it is a classic, you can't be what you can't see. And so we had some British women, and I think a lot that have come into the sport, long distance sport, having had corporate careers. So I'm thinking the Rachel Joyce, Emma Kate Lidbury, obviously like Chrissy Wellington, Leander Cave obviously came through the triathlon program, and they've Jodie Swallow, another one, or Kunamar as she is now, And they were achieving great results on a world level. And I think that was the start of then. And what you're now seeing is those people that were perhaps, I'm going to say like the second wave of that, because I was probably the first mm-hmm. wave in of going, oh, these are these people doing it. They've had corporate careers. Maybe I can do it. And then the more success breeds success.
Yeah.
I think the British, I think from a short distance, they've had a good program, which we're now seeing. And because maybe that program's so competitive at a short distance, like Indy Lee, Lucy Byram, those athletes have maybe weren't quite going to make that Olympic cut in the short course, but are still ridiculously talented. And so they've moved up into that long course. So we've now got that huge.
It's never like, I feel like it's never like once people are good somewhere and you see, like, obviously we're talking about the British women right now, but it could happen anywhere. Once like a group's, it's never a mystery how they like stay, right? It's like, then it's like, sure. Like you, like if everyone you know can like win a world championship, you're like, well, I guess this is normal. Like, right?
Yeah.
It's always like how you get to that in the first place is like what's like hard, right? And that's like, you have to create a culture. You have to like, and it's also a numbers game, I feel like, because like the UK takes triathlon a lot, like, it's coming out of the London Olympics. They invested heavily. They have pipelines. They take it a lot more seriously than we do here. Short course.
Yeah.
But then, so like, sure, not all those people then stay in short course, but it gets them, like, they have way more development triathlon than we do. Like, and way more people. I mean, obviously, we have a bigger country, so we have literally more people, but
a condensed population. Yeah.
Like, we don't have. Like, it's part of, like, why were U.S. women so good at soccer for so long? Because we had so many doing it at, so like...
The interesting question for me, and again, I'm now going to... Having offended all the Americans and the rest of the world, I'm now going to offend the Brits.
Okay.
Why is it so different to the men? Because we've had the Brownlees. But why don't we have in that male, like, why weren't the top six? You know, I think actually, like, David McNamee, although he'll probably say Scottish, not British or English... who else was in there? That he was the only one in the T1 in Miami that was Brit? But then we had like these seven women in there. Like that, where's that? Why are the women so strong then? Because if we see it's about that you can't be what you can't see. Well, the Brownlees, I think, will probably have had an impact on the women as well, in just in terms of visibility
are
of the sport in the UK.
Major sports in the UK that like siphon off men, because that's what happens in the US is like they do basketball or football instead of soccer or running, right?
Yeah.
So like,
I also think maybe it's just that men don't think they can do more than one thing.
Oh yeah, is that what
you think? Multitask. Maybe that's where the women are like, oh, I can do all three of those and have a family and have a job and it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good racing though. T100. Yeah. Let's discuss.
From what we could see,
It was excellent. In all fairness, okay, so I missed like almost all the men's race because I was running for like 5 hours because ultra running is stupid.
Long.
Yeah.
So I only saw the women's. So I don't know if so you're going to have to tell me if the
men's
race.
You only saw the important race.
I only saw the important race, only one I care about. So I don't know if the men's race was like totally different in the coverage or like in how it played out. Because the women's race, obviously, the sound went out for like an hour, which was fine. I went and showered, got some food.
The sound went out for an hour, and then they were plunged into darkness for an hour. So apart from that, it was funny because the sound went out, and then I think I did go away, or I was coming home from a cafe or something, and then I came back at home and put it back on again, and it was like black pictures. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
So we lost the sound, and now we've lost the visuals, and then I realized it's just because they were in the dark, and no one
had paid the
money for the light meter.
Yeah,
they owe my kids an apology because, you know, when the sound went out, the first thing I did, are you guys, get off the internet?
Well, I was watching it on my iPad, like muted, because my daughter wanted the big TV to watch her cartoons. So yeah, I had it on mute anyway. And then Khadija's messaging me like the sound went out and I was like, oh.
This is like, okay, so I feel like if I didn't know that it was on HBO Max, like nobody knew. Cause like, I feel like I have a pretty good knowledge of like where things are airing. And somebody told me like the day before that it was going to be on. So I actually watched it on HBO Max on my TV, which was really nice. Cause then you could just like, you know what I mean? Like I didn't have to like watch on a laptop or like connect anything. But yeah, cause apparently like they were airing the Eurosport feed on, cause HBO is owned by Warner Brothers.
When it went off YouTube, I went on to Outside.
Outside Watch had it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So was it any better across the different platforms?
No, I mean, it was like the same, but the sound, the sound went out on the Eurosport feed, which is what was feeding like HBO YouTube. Max and YouTube. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, okay, okay.
So if you were watching it in the web browser, the sound still worked.
Yeah. And the coverage is still the same. Like it's
the coverage is still the same.
You're still only seeing the same two people at the front of the race.
Right. There's that. There's that element. Yeah.
So in terms of Kelly, what happened in the men's race?
Right.
The coverage in that sense was the same as the women's race. You saw the front of the field and you didn't see anyone else. You only had the top 10.
So you're saying that you didn't see Sam Long? Because Sam Long is obviously the most kind of exciting in that race because of how he...
Is clickbait to the triathlon world.
That's true. But also he went from like dead last to second, which is impressive.
Yeah.
And you're saying that we never saw that.
You only really saw him in the later stages of the run when he got into the top bit. Yeah. And that's...
They realized, oh, crap, Sam's coming.
But I'm going to have to be really
careful. But aren't they running on a track? Like, can't we like look down and see where they are?
I have to be really careful what I say, but this is my feedback. It's 20 athletes contracted, and whether they're all the contracted athletes are there or it doesn't matter, but it's 20 athletes on a race course, which is meant to help show a narrative through the season.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Because we're meant to be making these 20 people household names.
Celebrities.
Yeah. But if we're not showing, and the whole reason of keeping it at 20 was it's manageable number, it's easier to cover in the race. So it's like, but we're not covering them in a race and we're still only doing what everyone else does and showing the first two or three. And we don't seem to be learning. You know, Milwaukee was a great example. Again, great race
Jason
at the front,
West.
But it was so exciting from that, like, fourth to 10th. In and the women.
In the women's, where there ended up being, like, the full-out sprint.
And it's the same. Like, it was great racing. You know, in the men's, it was, I need to pronounce his name correctly, but Mathis Margier, awesome ride, like, just hammering at the front. Brownie sat on his wheel. And that was exciting. And then by the end of the bike, Sam Ditlev and Sam Long had, Ditlev and Sam, other one, Laidlow, had caught up and there was a four. But that stage, but then again, but like you said, didn't see Sam Long coming through until the very end. And he was second, like, and then the same on the women, like, awesome racing by India, really popular win. And I know you're going to ask me a question on that as well about Ditlev. And she obviously rode up to Lucy, which was great. But then that's predominantly, you just saw those guys. And yeah, it was a great run battle. But you didn't see.
I was like,
the
we
commentary
saw
was so typical. It was just typical. It felt like an Ironman commentary.
The courses are lapped courses, again, for that reason of being able to cover it easily. And it's what, and it's like, but we're not doing anything different. Like, we want to make this product, and I'm saying this out of the love of my heart, if anyone from the PTO is listening, because obviously I'm on the board, we want to make this the best product in the world. Like, we want to be able to, and if the triathlon fans, which I know they say is not the audience,
right,
if we're finding it boring and mundane and hard to follow, that's who the fans are at the moment. Like, we haven't got the broader fans. So if it's not interesting for us, and we're not doing anything different from every other triathlon broadcast, that's my frustration. Like, it could be so good. We've got these amazing athletes. We do so much in social media leading up to the race. We've got all these stories to tell about them, but then we're not. And, you know, the commentators, I will give them
their... I thought they were a lot, like, to be fair, like,
I think they were good. And
they
see what we see.
They see what we see. I'm not hating on them. I thought they actually did a pretty good job. And as somebody who, like, heavily thinks Jan's overrated, I actually thought he added, like, a really nice element. I thought he was exciting.
Agree. I thought Jan was brilliant.
It did,
actually,
to your point, as of, like, right now, the only people watching are the tri fans. It did make me laugh because they have the NASCAR racer there, announcer there, to be the person who, like, doesn't know anything, to be like, tell me what they do in this situation. And it was cracking me up at one point because it was like, nobody is watching this who doesn't know what a transition is like right now.
But that's just, I mean, I think so. Rick was there because it was at Clash, and obviously going forward, I don't know who that anchor person will be.
But they'll always have somebody who is that, like, non-triathlon person.
But they need that, because otherwise they need, when you've got three opinionated in the nicest possible way, Jan, Rini, who have got great insights, and I thought those two were really good, and I'm going to hold breath on the next one. He was better than Milwaukee.
He has
Let's
gotten
say that.
Better.
He was better. But when you've got those three but he was still getting slated on the chat function. When you got those threes, your anchor person needs to be really strong to be able to, and needs to be impartial. And
I will say, just because I say it all the time, like, it's 2024. You can't have like a woman and be like, oh, well, we have a woman. That's not like, that's not like you are by definition, statistically, mathematically, not getting the best people in the world if everyone on your fucking commenting team looks the same. Like, that's just not how that works. So
I think you need to do a little try reality show. I mean, need to get people on the course who literally solicit people who literally don't know anything about triathlon, or they are married to a triathlete and they just talk crap the entire time.
Oh, my favorite part was when they went down to Holly's husband and they were like, why is she doing so good this year? And he was like, what the fuck?
This is my
second favorite part. My second favorite part, so I guess we're talking about husbands, is when they showed the entire argument between Kat Matthews and Mark
Matthews. I thought that was brilliant. I thought that was amazing. I think they should have both. I think they should have both been
the stuff they need to show.
They should have both been mic'd up for that. It would have been amazing.
Oh, it was actually better without sound. Yeah. I was texting because, you know, we were all texting friends and we were all like, we know exactly what they're saying. You could tell.
So the one thing I didn't gauge, but it has been common in the past, is during the women's race, they tend to go to the partners a lot for interview. And yet during the men's race, they don't go to the partners as much. And I want to put a caveat on, I don't have enough information of whether they did that in the men's race or not, but that tends to be stereotyped. It's like, well, hang on a minute. Are the women not good enough on their own that we have to talk to their partner or their coach, but yet the men are okay, we don't talk to their partners?
I think were making an effort. Like, Holly's partner's also her coach. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're making an effort. It wasn't just like, hey, got married. They were making an effort.
Did they do it on the men's side?
And I was going to say, like, obviously I was running and I missed most of the men's race, but
so
feel like they were making an effort to be more. I think the PTO gets some of the messages about like boxes to check, see we're equal. And so I think they were making an effort.
I know they did talk with Jason West's wife, I believe.
Okay. They talked with her. I'm just saying. Yeah, it's been stereotypical in the past, and I didn't have enough awareness on the men's because I did go for a ride because I got bored on that side as well. But yeah,
I was thinking about this though when I was running and missed the whole men's race, and apparently you were riding, and I feel like you guys, if your primary audience also is going to always be out working out during races, are you going to sell this?
Well,
that's not a problem for football fans,
but it was morning time for me. So that was another thing. Like, so if I had been in the US, I'd have probably done my training and been sitting. And bearing in mind, I knew I had to watch it to then write an article. But it was like 7 a.m. and 11 a.m. here in New Zealand.
Yeah, so swimming. I went swimming. Kind of that's what I was
swam.
Swimming.
Yeah.
I was swimming during the men's race. What? Like my first swim in 2 weeks.
I know I had completed my training, but I don't know what I was finishing my training. Yeah. I can't remember what I did was doing.
I'm just saying it because it's actually like a big hurdle when you talk about like making running or triathlon. Like your core audience is like not sitting around on a couch all weekend. You know what I'm
saying?
They
will argue again, and this is where we are not their audience. Caveat, we are the only audience they have at the moment. And so they have to pay attention to that, because until 2 or 3 years down the line, and we do become that projected or aim to be that household sport, we are not getting external people watching it who are the sports lovers that sit on the...
I will say,
on another thing, sorry, going on, because I probably had a coffee this morning. Down here in New Zealand, I've been watching Sky Sport. There is so much women's sport on. It is amazing. I am like, I can just flick through the channels and it'll be a men's game, a women's game, a men's game, a women's game. And it's just like alternates through. And I'm like, this is amazing.
The thing here has totally been the women's college basketball. Yeah. I don't know if you guys are getting into it.
It's March
but like,
Madness.
Well, it's about to start, but also like the
Caitlin Clark
is the biggest college. And literally I go to like a wine tasting with like friends who know nothing about sports. And they're like asking me, they're like, you know sports, right? And they start asking me about basketball. I'm like, I don't know anything about
it. So that's captured the imagination.
Yeah.
That's been like, yeah.
So I was about to say, there's something I was about to say. Oh, well, Khadija, okay, so you said you had some athletes there. And one of the things, and I was curious what they thought, because one of the things I was getting from the vibes from other was that I mean, it wasn't actually in Miami. It was like way the fuck out there in all like racetrack. So like there were no spectators. Yeah, it wasn't like iconic course downtown.
Yeah. I mean, they said they liked it. They said it was well run. But Michel, I know for sure, he's an experienced athlete. He raced for the Cuban Federation for years. He raced professionally for a little while when he first came to the United States, took some time off to get his family settled. He said he enjoyed the race. He said it wasn't a big crowd. He said, but even the age group competition was pretty stiff, which was what he was looking for.
But the thing is, like, if you're talking about like T100, you know, breaking in the mainstream and all that, like when they come to San Francisco, that course is fucking like, it's like in city, like people's houses are like in on the course, right?
And all so
like
the other, all the other races are.
Right.
So I would say see this how that is goes. We need a race to get things off the ground.
So that's why I'm curious.
And time time is short.
If they could get South Beach.
So we'll see. Like, obviously, next one's Singapore, which I know it's like iconic and like downtown, but it's still like a little. So we'll see how that goes. And then the one after that, San Francisco, which I'm like, you know,
you got San Francisco, London, Vegas. Yeah. They're all going to be like prime.
Flashy.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, Vegas is like out. Vegas is out. Vegas it's actually out in Henderson. Ooh. So it's also not like downtown.
That's at Henderson. That's right.
It's like, it's like 45 minutes.
It's the same. It's like Ironman Barcelona is Calais, which is like 45 minutes an hour out. 70.3 Sydney, when it used to be there, is in Parramatta, which is 45 minutes out of town. And not like, if you're going to Sydney, you're really disappointed when you're out in Parramatta.
Right. Which is like, I think it's kind of funny when races do this. And it's like, there should be some kind of caveat when you're like, no, this is like really in the city.
Yeah.
Like they should like specify.
Yeah. They used to do, we had an Olympic distance triathlon in Sydney. Mm. And it was amazing because for anyone that doesn't know Sydney, but you were literally... transition was opposite the Opera House, and then you swam in the bay by the Opera House. It was basically where the Sydney Olympics triathlon was. It was kind of almost there, and you rode around the city and over the bridge, and you ran, and it was just, but they then got into loads of shit because it just caused traffic chaos, and they had to shut all the roads. And they planned it on the day that there was an NRL game and an AFL game, and all the fans
I was talking to the Super Tri North American head of, and anyway, bought a bunch of stuff. But one of the problems with New York was like, there's so many events in New York that aren't just he's like, yeah, September, there's this big UN meeting. And you're like, oh, that's why we couldn't have the triathlon. It's just too much stuff. So,
yeah.
All right. Before we take a break though, Jocelyn did read your race recap on Triathletes Listed. And you referred to Magnus as, what was it, Jocelyn?
It was always likable.
Universally likable.
So yes, my first instinct seeing that was like, well, then who is universally unlikable, Sid?
Oh, people know.
Oh, you wanted to know who is universally not what does it mean?
No, I knew what that meant, but I was like, if someone's always likable, there's people that are always unlikable.
But I can't possibly say because I've offended enough people on this podcast today.
I think, Jocelyn, you can like tell, right? There's like people all the pros like, and there's people all the pros like.
Ditlev is always everyone's super happy when he wins. I think we saw that India Lee.
Right, you could tell everyone was very happy India won. Yeah. Because everyone likes her because she's very nice and she always helps her friends. And like, I'm not saying she's very funny, but I just mean like she has a lot of friends. You can tell, right? Like, whereas there are some people when they win,
everyone's like, yeah, well done. Like, they're supportive of them, but there's not that same wave of emotion or, I guess, whatever. Yeah.
Mm. As one pro said to me, no, they do.
Triathletes liked each other.
They do.
If I could tell you some of the stuff.
But there's I've some heard. That everybody doesn't like.
about a couple of
people.
Pretty high ranked. Yeah.
There's some people don't like, to be totally clear.
They have not won favors with many people.
No.
Okay, when this recording turns on.
I think one athlete was asked, like, and I think I can say this, I don't think it's one athlete was asked in a, you know, which other pro would you like be happy to go and ring and, you know, or go and have a coffee with? And they said nobody.
Oh,
you were like, oh,
I thought it was like, oh wow, okay,
Okay. We see you. You can be alone all you want to. Have fun.
I feel like the one thing, and this is like going to be so hokey, but like one of the things I actually really miss about Racing Pro is that it was like an automatic kind of entry into like a group of people who also had worked really, really hard. So you all knew what each other had gone through. And like the amount of like deep life conversations I'd had with someone I met like the day before, because like you're all like, should I revisit my whole life goals? You know, like, because
that sounds so familiar.
And I do think there's a difference. Like, I think you saw it again, and it's a point that I would love the sports brands, sports companies of triathlon to really take a grip of and use and promote for the women's side of the sport. You saw it at the end. And again, Indy was a popular winner, but regardless of that, Holly, Paula, all those women coming across, like, they were genuinely so happy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, they hate each other on the start line, for sure. Like, you're not hate each other, but you want to beat everyone else. They want to win. But there is a genuine community, joy, supportive network with the women, which I think that it is there in the guys, but it's just displayed differently. Like, it's not. I think it's such a, yeah, and I really wish people would start going, look, this is how we can promote women's sport, because the barriers to entry as well, a lot of women are worried about coming into the sport. But if you go, well, look, this is what it's like at the top, like it's a supportive community compared to this always got to be, oh, it's this bravado and we're wanting these meetups and this banter against one and the other, and we want the smackdown and the shit show kind of talk.
Smackdown. All right. Well,
is that American or is that British?
It's triathlon, British, guys. It's triathlon.
All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Piss again.
We're going to take a quick break so that we can play that. No, so Sid can name all of the people off air that she doesn't like. No. And then when we come back, we're going to answer some other listener questions.
Iron Women is excited to announce a new partnership with Bicycle, the largest global marketplace for pre-owned bikes. With more than 20,000 pre-owned and refurbished road, gravel, mountain, and triathlon bikes available, Bicycle connects buyers and sellers on a global scale and makes the process of buying and selling bikes safe, easy, and convenient for riders. We all know there are plenty of marketplaces and classified sites out there, but what sets Bicycle apart is their guaranteed buyer protection, secure payments, simple shipping, and first-class customer service. Additionally, when you sell a bike, Bicycle provides a bike box directly to your door and coordinates pickup at a time that works best for your schedule. That kind of service has me swayed, and I'm cleaning up one of my old race bikes to sell on Bicycle right now. For a limited time, you can save up to $100 on your purchase at Bicycle by entering the code FEISTYTRY, all caps and one word, at checkout. That's code FEISTYTRY at Bicycle.com. BUYCYCLE.com.
All right, Alyssa, I'm like starting to swim more again. And I feel like you were swimming a lot last year with One Water. And how did you keep your hair from getting so destroyed?
I was swimming so much last year. And I used Try Hard, Kelly, and I still swear by it. They have extensively researched this problem and created a superior vegan, dermatologically tested proprietary blend. Try Hard has shampoo, conditioner, body wash, and more stuff. Everything you're going to need for your pre and post swim necessities. I've also seen that top pros like Chelsea Sodaro and Lucy Charles Barkley also praise the effectiveness of Try Hard. I think it's like definitely changed how good I feel just coming out of chlorine.
And we have a code right now too for anyone who wants to try, you know, try hard and stop suffering from dry, itchy skin, having their hair get all, you know, green, which happens to me because mine's like super blonde and get all beat up. You can try any of the Try Hard products with the code 20feisty, that's 20feisty, for 20% off store-wide at tryhard.co. So that's 20feisty for 20% off at tryhard.co. All right, I was actually really hoping that people would send in relationship questions after last week. That was my dream. But instead, you guys, my dream. But we have gotten a lot of questions. So basically, and I've got this person.
The questions you did get were relationship questions.
Right.
Because triathletes are married to their bikes, right?
Right.
So technically.
We got some bikes. So basically, we had a lot of questions. And a lot of people are like, so now the tri-bike is gone. Basically, a lot of people, when they plan to go on like a big, I don't know, destination Ironman, like usually they're bringing kids or they're going on a vacation or they're bringing their family or like, you know, it's a big jump for them. Like they've been doing local races and now this is like the first race they're flying to. Mm-hmm. And so like they, and they're putting a lot of effort. So basically now that tri-bike's gone, they're like, what do I do? And I get it. Like we can say like, well, just pack your bike. But if you've never done it before, if you're also traveling with like, right, you also plan on going on a vacation, like there's all these. And I think there's a fair point that this is actually going to be a problem for Ironman. Ironman needs to invest in like a new partner service. Yeah. Or something.
Or a bike shipping bike business.
Or bike shipping. Like
bike packing and shipping.
Because it is Ironman's clientele that is like going to be.
You're like, I'll pay $700 for you to like pack and ship my bike.
Well, those people now are just going to be like, screw it. I'm just going to do races I can drive.
And I'll come and pack and ship your bike. That may be the better way. I'll do it for them.
This is how we're going to make some side hustle money.
But I do think like, actually it is a real problem, right? Like, cause like in fairness, like to them, these people will probably just be like, well, I just won't fly to that race. Like there's no reason to, right? You know, do you see what I'm saying? Like, they'll just be like, well, screw it. Like, I'm just not going to do it. Because like, if you create barrier, like they just won't. Like, does that make sense? Like, I learned how to pack my bike the first time because I, like, had to. But if you didn't have to, you'd just be like, well, I don't want to do this.
You know, I figured out when I was traveling a lot with my bike how to break the bike into two smaller boxes that both fit under the oversized dimensions. And then I would make up elaborate stories about, like, what was in those boxes that was not a bike. So that I wouldn't pay bike fees.
Alyssa one time told somebody it was a Clarin. It's just pieces
it's,
of...
At
yeah.
that
yeah,
point, it's not. It's like just art pieces of metal.
I'm right. an artist and I'm like going to this art festival.
I think equipment is always handy because you're vague. Alyssa one time accidentally told them it was a clarinet. Oh. And you're like, that doesn't look like a clarinet at all.
A clarinet's pretty tiny.
Yeah.
It's an erg machine.
Like maybe a cello.
It's an erg machine. That's
I will
what
say
it
though,
is.
I do think like I remember the first time packing my bike and going to a race and I was like super, super nervous, right? And like I just feel like actual advice for people, guys, think back. Actual advice is like it's not as hard as you think it is. Mm-hmm. Like you're scared because in your head you're like, oh my God, if I don't do this right, like I'm gonna crash and die and my bike's gonna break and this is like, but it's actually really only like four pieces. And almost every bike shop, like if you put it back together, almost every bike shop will look it over for you. Like that's what I did. I was like, hey, can you just check and make sure I did this right? Like,
I think that's the sense. Like, check out where you're going and just contact the local bike shop and say, hey, first time I'm doing it, can you check it? You know, if I do it, can you check it out? Or even contact them if you're that worried. Like, you take it to your bike shop before you fly and they pack it for you and you take it, book it in to take it to the bike shop. When you get there, I know that's not quite as straightforward, but yeah,
it is like once you do it a bunch of times, you do it and you realize it is like a lot less complicated than you think it is.
Really... I think also as well, and again, this is difficult for people to do, but giving yourself a bit extra time. So don't, I know it's hard when you've got family and kids and stuff, but you know, don't necessarily fly in at the last minute if you're not familiar with then building it, so that you've got a bit of time that can be less stressful than a mad panic of getting it done. And if you do need to go and then sort anything out because you're not familiar, you can.
I think the other half is because somebody who messaged me is going to Taupo for 70.3 Worlds this year.
Taupo.
Whatever. And but they're going, like, they're also bringing their whole family and they're going to go on vacation after. So they're like, what the fuck? Like, I don't want to drag my bike around for like 2 weeks after, which is like fair. And I was thinking about like, okay, so again, so I don't have kids. But my understanding is when you have kids, you have to just accept that everything takes like 10 times longer than it should.
And so much more stuff.
And so I think when you are traveling with a bike, you also just accept that. You're just like, I am just going to stand in the airport baggage claim for an hour.
I would say for, and I did some videos with Iron Man after Iron Man New Zealand, ready for Taupo 70.3. And we talked about travel and accommodation and that sort of stuff. And I would like to think that people are going to come down, and because it is such a long trip, take some time, either family or just on their own, to travel around and see some of New Zealand. Obviously, on that element, depends what your travel is. If they're flying into Taupo and then leaving from a different part of the country because they've traveled, it's a little bit difficult. But I would, look at if you're flying out of the same place, like see if there's somewhere local. Even like a local family in Taupo, can I leave my bike with you for 2 weeks kind of thing, and just so we don't have to deal with it? Or is there, I think ship might, there are some bike
there are
shipping
some bike shipping
they're not super
services,
cheap, but like do that, or just try and leave it in one place so you're not having to travel around with it. I know that's, again, easier said than done.
Maybe I'm spoiled because of where I've lived, but don't a lot of these airports have storage lockers?
So that'd be the other thing, like go to the airport, but I'm not sure with bikes whether you'd want to leave a bike in a storage locker. And also Taupo is 3.5 to 4 hours from Auckland, which is the main airport,
right? So I think there's some complicatedness with Taupo specifically, but you definitely can.
Public service announcement, if anybody already has their slot for the 70.3 World Champs in Taupo and hasn't booked accommodation, I would do that the first thing from listening to this podcast.
Pause right now.
Even if you haven't got your spot for the race, but are intending to qualify, I would book accommodation now, and then you can cancel at a later date. It is going to be limited accommodation.
Really?
Yes. And I would also reach out, start looking at homestays. You're going to have to be a bit further away as well, most likely. But it is a small town. I think probably the travel companies and Ironman have booked out a lot of the hotels already, like Nirvana and that sort of thing. So either get with a travel company, that might be the other option.
Add the Nirvana upgrade. That's what that was. I had no idea.
I would definitely be leaving your accommodation to later on in the year.
Who knew? Yeah. Well, everyone apparently, but
now, yeah. I'm
already going to Australia.
And I can do a travel tip as well. Go down that path.
Had not decided yet if I was going to go to 70.3 Worlds or not. Yeah. So now I'm like, well, apparently I won't have anywhere to stay. So.
Yeah, but I think there'd be a good homestay network as well. Like you could probably hook up with Sam Warriner and the Sweat 7 team that are there, and she's an ex-pro and things like that. There's probably options.
All right, well, there you go. But I do think it is one, we are definitely going to need to do some videos on some basic bike maintenance and how to pack your bike, because I do think it's not I promise it's not as hard as you think it is. And two, there's Ironman probably needs to invest in a business that can service this clientele.
I can do videos on how to lie your way out of paying bike fees for the airline.
We're not doing that, Jess.
Well, I just have a sponsor for those. Yeah,
that's there we go. Another point. So, international flights are pretty good on the whole with baggage allowance, depending on status, I guess, or quantity. But it's just worth knowing domestically in New Zealand, it's a $20, so New Zealand dollar fee if your bag is over 23 kilograms. You can work out the maths with pounds conversion.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. You guys. So my scale changed itself to kilograms. I have no idea.
I did it.
And I'm so confused.
Manifested.
I only put batteries. I don't use it. Yeah, whatever. Our scale. I put batteries in it because I was trying to do the sweat testing thing. And so I've only started using it again recently. And it changed itself to kilograms this morning. And I was what happened? What is this number?
Did I lose half my weight?
So I've not been trained. I've been on a bit of a break while I've been down here, but I've sort of been trying to just keep active mentally more than anything, but not training. Anyway, the friend that I'm staying with, she does F45.
Mm-hmm.
So I went last Thursday, but it went this Thursday again, and it was a strength session.
Nice.
And it's funny because I work in kilograms, but I'm used to doing my strength sessions in the US. So the numbers I see on the weights are all pounds, obviously. And so then we're doing stuff today and I'm going to pick up a weight and I'm like, oh yeah, that's not pounds. That's like, that's like quite a lot. That's quite a lot different. And I'm like, oh no.
It's very confusing with like, because yeah, the weight, the whatever they're called. Okay, so I don't, what's the plates? My husband calls them discs. So I was about to say discs and that's not right. But the plates always say are in kilograms. And then you're like, why can I only lift 5 pounds? Yeah. What the fuck is happening? And then you like, you think about it and you're like, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So whereas I was like, well, why can't I lift this 35-pound right. dumbbell on my, and then I was like, oh, that's because it's 35 kilograms. Like, there's a reason why it's not the same.
Other update though are the new Ironman rules, which I know we were like laughing about beforehand, but I just think guys, like, they update the rules every year, but I just think it's really, really funny that they updated the rule to say you can't stick things down your kid anymore. Aerodynamic things. No more sticking plastic aerodynamic things down your kit and pretending it's for water.
What if you have a gel?
Maybe that's
okay.
Can
you stick your gels in your sports
bra? I forget how the exact phrasing was, like, extra fuselage that is aerodynamic in benefit or something like that. Like, it can't be, like, even if it's duct tape, even if it's, like,
that's
plastic.
That's always been the way, though.
You can't, yeah, so it's like, no.
It's always been the way. They just couldn't enforce the rule when people started putting bottles down right. their tops because they couldn't prove whether people had used it for nutrition or not.
Right. So now they're like, no.
Yes.
Everybody.
I would have just liked to be like, hey, could we have had a seat? We've been contacting them for years about just having a conversation about rules and regs as athletes. We're like, mm-hmm. we just want a seat at the table. We had a meeting with them in Kona. We talked about some of the rules. And yet then they come out with this and it's like, oh no, so again we can't have a seat at the table. Like, we're making rules for a sport and the people making it are a private company and the technical officials, and it's like, there's more people who are your stakeholders in this sport. Like, can we not just have a conversation?
Don't feel yeah. bad, they've been ignoring yeah. me since 2016. WT has changed their rules. USA Triathlon has changed their rules.
Do they, Khadija, are the rules still for Ironman? Like, yes. still banning?
Is it
like fully covered?
They say that they follow the WT rules at this point, but there's a caveat that I'm required to contact each and every race director before each race, and I told them point blank to their faces, I'm not doing it. Wetsuit or non-wetsuit, the rules, you say you follow WT rules, follow WT rules. I'm not calling anybody.
So the World Tri rules then say that you can have, be like, because the Ironman rules said like, no.
Yes.
Okay. No flotation.
As long as there's no flotation and as long as there's no compression, the rules as far as compression are concerned are still the same. So kits that are made or kits that I have custom,
sure.
I have to follow the rules. Just like if somebody showed up in lava pants or something.
I was going to say, people do.
They're not going to check them.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this, but somebody told me in the porta potties in T1 they find a lot of lava pants, which I feel like that has to
paddles, fins, lava pants, swim buoys. I'm like, how the fuck did they get in the water to start with? I can understand the shorts, but yeah.
You're kidding me.
I, though, feel like going into a porta potty and taking off your shorts and abandoning them takes more time than whatever time you saved from wearing them. Don't
yes.
you think?
Maybe yes. not for some people, but yeah. Yeah.
Last year when I was standing in the men's, like right next to the pro men's transition by their bikes at Nice, like as they were running in. So I was watching them all run down that long thing right up to where I was standing, trying to stuff all their shit down their kit that was aerodynamic. And they're like all like ripping their kits and trying to like shove giant camelbacks down their kits. And I was like, there is no way this is faster. Like, the amount of time this is saving you. It was ridiculous. Mm. So I actually am kind of glad that they changed that rule. I know, like, they didn't. I feel like we can just, like, let's just pretend that whole year where everyone shoved things down their kids never happened. And, like, move on. Because it was ridiculous. So.
Yeah. I've got a question, though.
Yes.
We talked about rules and stuff. Are we going to talk about the return of Mike Riley?
Oh, I saw that
oh,
too.
He's coming at to Lake Placid.
Wait, Sid, are you doing Placid?
I'm
not going.
Everybody's going to Placid.
Sid, are you doing Placid? I'm excited, I'm sure.
I decided what I'm doing tomorrow. I get alone next week or months after.
Yeah, I'm curious about this whole return of Mike Riley. He's in general,
Tom Brady of triathlon announcing.
In general, I am not usually a fan of returning things, right? I'm not making a statement about Mike Riley or other people. I'm just saying in general, I think once you're done, you should move on. And it's fine. It's fine. Tour. Every individual person, you do you, whatever.
It is interesting. I think in Ironman New Zealand this year, because I think this is now the second year he hasn't been there. And it is interesting. I didn't realize quite the impact. People will not enter races because he's not there anymore.
Well, Placid's already sold out, so it's not a problem.
Yeah, it's wild. It is wild. True. That's a good point.
So I don't know why. And anyway, and at Kona, Joe and Carissa did a good job. It's not like they were bad, right? Joe did a really good job. So I'm I don't know. You need to move on eventually. We all need to move on.
Oh, no. We actually were saying, I loved Joanne Murphy.
Yeah.
I love Paul Kay. I think the boys in New Zealand, Cam Harper and Brian Ashby, are awesome. There are some great people, and they need time to kind of, yeah. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting.
All these brands are talking about trying to get a new audience. They need to find somebody that people are attracted to with a different vibe. They're trying to get the same thing, just in a different package.
That's, so the new generation who have no idea who they are. I mean, I respect for what they've done for the sport, but
this is part of my thing last year. And I felt like I felt at Kona because they were forced to, we were starting to move on from and it's not I like all these guys but it's just that if you want to attract new people and a new vibe, mm-hmm. you got to speak their language, right?
Have a new CEO of Ironman, which I think might start to bring that change around.
And you got to meet him?
And you got to meet him.
Was he universally likable?
Touche. Wow.
Asking the hard questions.
Jocelyn always trying to get the tea.
I was impressed. Had a really great conversation. He listened. We spoke. I mean, it's early days. He's on a listening tour. He's talking to a load of people across sport, not just in Ironman, the good list and the bad list, I think I would say. I think they gave him a list of you should talk to these people, and he went, yep, that's great, I will, but who's the list of the people that you don't want me to talk to, sort of thing.
Right.
And he got that list too. Yeah.
I will say, interestingly,
they're not there to be universally likable. They're there to run a business. So,
Sid, but you know what? I've talked to four or five people that he has sat down and talked with. He has not talked to me. Nobody's reached out to me.
Oh. So Kelly does not like him, hence not universally likable.
Not universally.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. But you thought, I think he's on a listening tour. I heard good things from the other people too. I think right now, if you were not hearing good things, it'd be well, what the fuck are you doing? Your only job is to sit there and be that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Tell me more, right?
And he's obviously, I get it. It's a challenge, it's how you.
Right.
It's corporate 101, and he's got a fascinating background as well. So he's not, he's been in investment banking, he's been in education, he's been the dean of a university. He has then been running, a fitness, Equinox, is that the company? A huge thing through COVID and all of that. He's an ultra runner. He is going to do a triathlon now. So he comes with a huge, broad background in and the big thing for me, there was a drive around the athlete experience, and I think you see that from his work in education of just making this, giving the opportunity to people through education when he was at the university, or through Equinox and the gym experience of life improvement. So it will be interesting to see.
I think they are going to get a little bit more away from this kind of in the weeds drama, and a little more back on what makes a good experience? What do our athletes want? you know, what will get them signing up. And because, like, guys, I was at the pool yesterday, and there was a guy who had 20 Iron Man stickers on his truck, and they're like, how do we get back to those people, right? Like, you have a brand that inspires that much fucking dedication. You better, you better not lose those people, because,
like, what you have something there. What other brand, bar Nike, and I'm trying to think, there was another one we mentioned because we talked about this, gets people to put a tattoo on them? And it's funny, like, I was in Sydney for a couple of days, and there's no particular races around, and I could still count the number of people that were wearing, and this wasn't in a training setting, so I wasn't
It was like randomly on the street.
Just walking down the street, doing the coastal walk from Bondi to Bronte, and an Iron Man t-shirt, an Iron Man visor. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say all tattoos.
No. Well, they might have had tattoos. I didn't see necessarily the tattoo, but the obvious visuals.
The gear.
All right. Well, here's our random. Well, I don't know if it's a random question, but how do you feel then about the wear? Because I will say, I actually, not the tattoo, like all the clothes. Like, I will say, I actually feel like sometimes we hate too much of people wearing all their Iron Man stuff, because, like, 90% of my t-shirts are from races. Like, I don't own a swim cap that isn't from a race. So if I'm like, of course I'm going to wear all this shit. Like, it's what I own. All my backpacks are from races. Like, I'm wearing the Iron Man backpack because it's really handy and it doesn't have a hole in it yet, right? So, like, but then the guy with the 30 stickers at the pool, I actually only saw his car, but when I went into the pool, I could definitely pick out which guy it was. Like, I knew. So there's, like, this line of, like, how far do you go? So there's my question. How do you guys feel, to wrap it up, about wearing all the stuff?
I'll tell a story at the end. Yeah.
I don't have any stuff that I purchased. So my backpacks, I've given a lot of them away. Especially the ones that were given out that were like the pool bag.
Oh, I still use that one.
Those are really useful for my pool gear. So I kept one and gave the other ones for people I knew who would use them. But I don't, the t-shirts, I work out
shirts,
in them.
I say vary by year and country. So I had like a whole bunch of them. Like in 2010, I did almost all the North American Ironmans, and I did not like the women's cut of those shirts. They were like too tiny, too short. I have a long torso, but then there was like Iron Man Cozumel. I still have that shirt and I wear it.
Yeah, that's true. It was weird. It was annoying when it was like the same shirt or the same backpack for all the races and you were doing like a bunch, you would be like, what the fuck do I do with this? But guys, I will say, since everyone's hating, I do buy after the race, not before, the t-shirt from a full with all the names on it, because I figure in 30 years, then I'll have all my t-shirts of the fulls that I've done, and I'll be like, oh.
That's pretty cool.
There you go, see?
I'm in New Zealand, and I've said several times, and part of the reason of coming back down here was because I used to live here. So in 2020, sorry, now the dog's barking, because I'm actually at a friend's house sorting out all the shit that I have left from when I was here before. Like, hold on a second.
She's on mute yelling at the dog.
Yeah, on mute yelling at the dog. It's fine. It's all right. Good boy.
We can't really actually hear the dog.
Can you not hear?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's okay.
Sorry.
It's okay.
So I left New Zealand in 2020 thinking I was away for 5 weeks on a training camp, and then didn't come back until this trip because of COVID, because the world shut down. And bless them, my friends had all my stuff. I did pack up my apartment, thankfully. So I came back here and started. This is the second day of sorting through shit. Today is the taking pictures of the stuff I'm hoping to sell. But the first day was literally like opening up bags and bags of race kit. So a lot of it was cycling kit, but a lot of it was race t-shirts and stuff like that. And I started at the beginning, I was like, I have to be lethal on this. It's like, it's going. I'm just going to like donate it all. And then I'd find the race t-shirt that was like, oh, but this one was from this race and it's kind of memorable. And yeah, I won that race. Right. Oh, and I can't throw that in. So I then start like holding it. And I'm like, I'm not going to wear it because it's going to stay in New Zealand in a box so that I've condensed down to one box, not 50 million.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny of that.
I do I have a box of all the old ones. Yeah. Oh, the flags. Right.
I save the flags. Yeah, I have the flags of each of the Ironman races I've done on a wall in my.
Yeah, so I that's feel like the wall I never have to paint. I have water bottles from my first Ironman still, right? Like you keep like the
you have
not
no
like
them, right?
I don't use them anymore. Yeah, they're like they're like on
I
my
have
shelf.
This really beautiful embroidered vest from my first Ironman, which was Ironman Wisconsin, that was like they did not have women specific clothing back then because that was in I don't know. It was like 20
unisex,
years
but that's
ago.
That's okay. Unisex is fine. That's women.
Yeah.
As well.
So it was like an extra small unisex and it was like shaped like a square, but I still have it. It's really nice.
Do you remember though, then all the race shirts went through that phase where they were like overdid it for women's cut and everything was like cap sleeve and like V-neck and like soup and like hike. And I was like less a fan of that. I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. So.
Yeah. Another interesting thing. I found a box that one of the first boxes I opened was full of food.
No.
Because obviously I only thought I would be away for 5 weeks. So I'd just gone, oh, like, that's fine. I'll come back to it in 5 weeks. And bless her, my friend, obviously she wasn't going to look in to see.
Yeah, yeah.
What stuff. Thankfully, nothing perishable. It was all like dry goods kind of stuff. And well, there was another box full of nutrition. And that was like, that is going. That is no way. But like, jars fired. Which are like yes 2019,
it's expired
which still would have been out of date even when I was here but and then 2020 stuff, and I was like
funny. Well, you guys should let us know, send us a voicemail, if you keep all of your Iron Man shirts, you wear them all the time, and also send us relationship questions because I still am determined to solve people's relationship problems. Thank you for joining us this week. It's been another week of If We Were Writing, and hopefully next week, Sarah will be back and not sick. And we'll see you all then. My time, my time. None of you people can tell me to stop. My town, my crown. We know what it takes to be reaching the top. We're reaching the top. We're reaching the top. We know what it takes to be reaching the top.